We are glad the Allens are here in our class this morning. I didn't want to overlook them, so we're grateful for them. Okay, this is the outline that we've been sharing, using for our studies, and we're in this last part. Talked with someone recently that said, you know, how can you be sure this is the right outline? Well, I'm not sure. You can read any number of books and you get so many different ways to outline the book. To me, it is a tough book to outline. But I hope that what we've used has been true to the text. And, of course, we're in this last section here, emphasizing the uncertainty of the world. And even though the world is uncertain in so many different ways, we can still learn to trust God and serve Him in the ways that these last chapters talk about. Live thankfully, joyfully, and productively in such a world. We were talking about the first six verses of chapter 11 when class ended last week. Even though the world is uncertain, and again, you go back and you start looking on page 19 where this lesson begins. The premise of this lesson is that the uncertain world, though it is that, should not prevent us from doing certain things. And that's the subsection of each of these parts of lesson 6. Verses 1 through 6, that we can still be active in doing good, even though the world is uncertain. And the Scripture certainly teaches us to do that. Cast your bread upon the water. Divide your portion, 7 to 8. Be beneficent. Be thoughtful of others. Misfortune comes. It'll come to them. It can come to you too. And we talked about that some when class was over last time. The certainty of life's misfortunes. Yes, man is helpless against those things. He can't control it or calculate it. All he can do is respond to it when it happens to him or other people. Be helpful, be thoughtful. We mentioned in verse 4, the farmer who will watch the wind. He won't sow. He's looking for the perfect time to act, and there is no perfect time to act. You do what's right, you do what's needed, you do what's good. Because if you're looking for the perfect time to act, you wind up doing nothing. You'll never do anything. And that certainly is not the way the Lord wants us to behave. Verses 5 and 6, again, this is what we're talking about. The man doesn't know the path of the wind or the formation in the womb. Things are beyond our control to know or to understand. And so we have to act in that quote, uncertainty. And we're told to be wise, verse 6 of chapter 11. Sow your seed in the morning and do not be idle in the evening. Work as hard as you can. As industrious as you can. What if the morning, as we said last week, what if the morning sowing fails? You've still got the other to fall back on. What if both succeed? It's a double blessing. That lets you then do more to help. And if one fails, you have the other to fall back on. And if we just don't do anything, then we are doomed to failure. Okay, so that's where we were talking last time. And now we get to the last section of this outline. Bottom of page 23. Even though the world is uncertain, and it is, we're not denying that it's not uncertain. It is. There are so many unknown factors. We can still do something, and that way this last section is, we can still enjoy being alive. That seems to be what Solomon is saying in this particular section. This first point on the screen doesn't just describe people in the world. You know any Christians that sort of live this way? I've talked to some. Almost, and I put fatalistic, maybe I should have put that in quotation marks. I'm not saying that everyone's fatalistic, but some of the things that even some brethren say, how they act, display somewhat of a fatalistic attitude about life. And that's tragic, because who ought to be the most hopeful people on the planet? It's got to be Christians, because we've got this future ahead of us. But so many people are so entangled in carnal living, they can't even enjoy the blessings. And hasn't Solomon talked about some of that in this book? I mean, he has. The one who works himself to the bone, this has been said so many times, like chapter 5. The one who will work himself to the bone, but what about all the stuff he's hoarding up? What's going to happen to him? It's going to leave somebody else to fool with, because he can't take it with him. So that can certainly lead someone in this downward spiral type of thinking that they can't even enjoy. I mean, they work and work and work and amass and build up all this stuff and don't even learn how to enjoy it. It's the the chase is so overwhelming to them. And if we succumb to the uncertain world, we start living like the world, then this is going to be our mindset. Whether we're a Christian or not, we're going to live every day and not even have an overall sense of enjoying just being alive. I'm not saying doing anything specifically, just to be thankful to be alive. And I think that's what Solomon is talking about here as we start here in verse 7. So, what is the first thing he says in verse 7? He says, the life is pleasant. And then what else? All right. The light is pleasant and it is good for the eyes to see the sun. This is a general statement of saying what? Be glad that you're alive. Be glad that you wake up every morning and you can see another day. I thought of Psalm number 8, and I want to turn and read that just for a moment. Turn to Psalm number 8. I think it's right to say it this way. Among everything that God has made, you've got to put us in that category. Man is God's crown jewel of creation because of the place that we occupy in the scheme of things. Ralph, if you have Psalm number 8, read for us, please, verses 3 through 8. Thank you. The last part of verse 5. Who's been crowned with glory and honor? Only man has. And everything's been put under subjection to him. Now, that's, of course, not everything, but everything in the created world is under the feet of man, so to speak. So, here we are now. God didn't make you a tree or a flower or an animal. He made you as a person. And we'll say more about that in a moment. But here we are. We're in this position. And so, what ought we to be thankful for? We ought to be thankful to be alive. It's good to see the light. Good for the eyes to see the sun. It's to be alive is a blessing. You go back to the creation account when God made us male and female, and then chapter 2 and verse 7, that God formed man from the dust of the ground and then breathed into his nostrils the breath of life. And what happened? He became a living soul or a living being. And from that moment on, there's been humans. God then put in place, after that creative account, He put into place the reproductive system. God can make a man today from the dust of the ground like He did back then, but He chooses not to. He chooses to let the laws of nature have say over that ever since that day. But I'm just saying that to be alive is a blessing. And if man has many years, first part of verse 8, what does Solomon say? Rejoice in them. What if you have few years? Rejoice in that too. Now, some might become rather bitter about that if a person, and it happens. I mean, some die very young in life, don't they? Either through their own sinfulness or just as an accident at the hands of other people. Whatever number of days we have, we need to be thankful for that. Yes, Brother Lambert. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. Turn to, I'm pretty sure I wrote this down, 2 Samuel chapter 19. I may have put this on a later chart, and if I did, we'll just note it then. But 2 Samuel chapter 19. I remember when my dad's mother, she died a few years ago. She was 98 when she died. And she was in failing health, living in a nursing home. And She was at the end, basically. But she'd wake up every morning, and she'd say to either if my dad was there or my aunt or just the staff of the nursing home, "Oh me, I woke up. Why am I alive again today?" She just lost the will to live. She didn't find any enjoyment in living at all anymore. 2 Samuel 19, as you look back over the previous chapters, you'll see this is after the episode with Absalom. And remember how Absalom usurped the throne and forced David to flee the city, and eventually Absalom was killed, and we can call it order was restored back to Jerusalem. But I want to look in 2 Samuel 19, starting in verse 31. There was an older man, Barzillai the Gileadite. Listen to what he says. Verse 31. Now Barzillai the Gileadite had come down from Rogelim, and he went on to the Jordan with the king, that's David, to escort him over the Jordan. Now Barzillai was very old, being 80 years old, and he had sustained the king while he stayed at Mahanaim. So he had sort of supported David, for he was a very great man. So verse 33, what did David say to him, basically? "You took care of me, now you come back with me and let me support you. Let me take care of you." Verse 33. What did he say? Verse 34. Barzillai said to the king, "How long have I yet to live that I should go up with the king to Jerusalem? I am now 80 years old. Can I distinguish between good and bad? Can your servant taste what I eat or what I drink? Can I hear any more the voice of singing men and women? Why then should your servant be an added burden to my lord the king?" What was his thought process? I'm old. Life is a burden for me anymore. See, how many folks think that way? A lot of people think that way. And sadly, again, I'm making a distinction. I think one can be made. A lot of older Christians think that way. But again, see, what is different about us compared to people out there? Any difference? Absolutely. We've got a better place to go. We have a hope. We have a future. And so, Solomon's just, his general exhortation here is, it's good to be alive. Now, does that mean that you won't have failing health? Well, no, it doesn't mean that. But what's it take on the inside of a person's head to find the joy in being alive, to find the good things that make life meaningful? Go ahead. Hope? Absolutely. Family? Optimism? Spiritual blessings in Christ? All these things could be put on the piece of paper if you're making a list. Absolutely. Because if you're a Christian, are you not involved in something that's a lot bigger than you are? You are. You're involved in the greatest cause on the face of the earth, the cause of Christ. And if nothing else, you can be a blessing in that way. Be encouragement to younger saints who are taking your place, so to speak, on this story, this drama. So, first part of verse 8, now back in Ecclesiastes 11. "Indeed, if a man should live many years, let him rejoice in them all. Let him remember the days of darkness." Now that gets us to the next part here. What's eventually coming? Well, it's the days of darkness. Now notice the text, verse 8. Well, I'm sorry, verses 7 and 8. Verse 7 talked about what? Light. Now we're talking about darkness. It's a contrast. Good to be alive. If light means life, and I'm convinced that it does, and it seems that darkness here is referring to death. Not unhappy days, but the days after life, the days of darkness. And are they many? Well, yes, they are. They are many. I think it's talking about days that are spent in Sheol, which is the Hebrew word used for the realm of the dead. New Testament parallel, of course, would be the Hadean realm. But that seems to be what we're talking about here. And the Scripture, we know in many places, here's just two of the more familiar passages that speak about the brevity of life. We are that vapor. Job says in Job 14, 1 and 2, days are like a shadow. And they just flee away. The flower blooms and then fails. Peter says in 1 Peter, his epistle. So again, we need to find the joy in being alive. Now, someone can't make you enjoy being alive. You have to. That comes from you. Yes, Miss Judy. Yes, you're right. We most certainly can. We can find the joy in being happy. That is correct. Thank you, Paul. I didn't see that pop up there. Yeah. Perfect. Well, that's true. Experience in older age does present a different way to serve. And that's one good way to look at that. So, whatever your station is in life, I think the general exhortation is find the joy in being alive. Find the meaning and the purpose of life. Even in an uncertain world, you can do a lot. And so be thankful that you are alive. Now, starting in verse 9, I believe we see some admonitions to the young, and we're going to ignore the chapter division. We'll just skim right over that break because I don't believe the context stops. I preached a sermon to the young about 2 weeks ago on Sunday night, and these some of the points that's made in here I thought about and got from this particular passage. There's five admonitions I believe Solomon has here. The first one, he says what in verse 9? Of chapter 11, the first part of verse 9. Yes, rejoice in your childhood. Some things he says. Relatively speaking, now I know that I can't say this is across the board because even some young children suffer immensely, but just generally speaking, we're going to put it that way. Your life is relatively pain-free, isn't it? Now, you would say, and we got some young folks here, you would say, no, it's not. Well, When you get farther out of it, you realize that is so. That is entirely so. This is the most carefree time of your life. Well, I've got school. I've got these tests. I know you do. But you don't have what things hanging over your head that adults have to experience? Like what responsibilities? Making a living, paying a mortgage, providing food for others who depend upon you. All those things, I'm not saying those are things that aren't rewarding. They are, but they're just not something that you have to be bothered with. Basically, you're in a very carefree time of your life, and it needs to be enjoyed. That's what he's saying. Burdens and responsibilities, they're not yours. They will be someday when you're ready to meet them, but right now, you don't have those. And that makes this a great time to be alive. I know. It happens. That's why I'm saying we're talking here, generally speaking. And this is true. This is generally true. All right? So, you have your whole life ahead of you. Now, again, that you could die tomorrow. All right? We know that. But basically speaking, rejoice during your childhood, he says. Rejoice, young man, during your childhood. Now, the next thing he says is, follow the impulses of your heart. Let your heart be pleasant during the days of young manhood. Follow the impulses. Now, if you stop right with that statement right there, how could that be misinterpreted? Even to the young. Just go sow your wild oats. Just whatever fleeting thought flies in your head, seize it. Well, that would nothing be further from the truth because we know other places in the Scripture teach us. Yes. Prevailing when does that describe our culture? If it feels good, do it. Yes, that describes the world. That most certainly does. But we know that's not what he's saying. So how should we interpret this then? Well, be open to new horizons. Be willing to consider opportunities that are still coming your way. Stretch yourself. Challenge yourself. What am I going to do with my life? What am I going to do with myself? Well, if you're 14, 15, 18 years old, do you have to know what that is just yet? No. But think about that. Let those thoughts come into your mind and ponder those. And if it's something that's, of course, if it's not good, then don't do it. But if it's honorable and if it's godly, and you can support your family and can support the local church where you'll be a member, then I think that's what he's saying here. Follow those impulses of your heart. Now, the third admonition is in the last part of verse 9. So, rejoice, first part. Second part, follow those impulses, yet. What's the disclaimer? You're going to have to face the judge. There's going to be judgment. So, don't forget the judgment. Impulses are not to be lived heedlessly because of the judgment that's out there. We'll have to answer before God. Many passages that could be cited, we know a lot of them by heart. Man lives once and then there's a judgment. We almost all appear before Christ's judgment seat. The verses like these would certainly teach the same thing. So, rejoice, follow your impulses, but remember that there is a judgment to come. The fourth admonition, verse 10. Remove vexation from your heart and put away pain from your body. Why? What about the years of your youth? They are gone just like that. I remember saying in the sermon a couple of weeks ago, if you ever doubt just how fast time flies by, go ask an older person that you really respect and ask them, how long does it seem to you since you were my age? And they'll tell you what? Just like it was yesterday. And it just goes by that quickly. And so he says, youth is fleeting. And it is. You only have one youth to live in innocence. Just one. You don't get a second one. Is there a fountain of youth? Only men try to find it. It's not out there. It's just not out there. Too many people get involved in activities that rob them of their youth. Is that not true? They do. Whether it's inappropriate sexual behavior. What's the old phrase? We have babies making babies. We have people bringing in babies that aren't even fit to care for them. Getting involved in other inappropriate behavior. Legal trouble with the law. Crime. Drugs. I mean, it's just on and on that list would go. And what happens is it robs them of their youth. We shouldn't want the children to be adults before they're ready to be adults. Let them enjoy being children. Because that's a great time of life. It most certainly is. So that time is fleeting. It's passing by. Anything else through the end of chapter 11? I mean, these are just general statements, but I think we would know them to be true in what he's saying here. And in such a case as that, what generally happens with those who do this, the second point there, what about their life? It will become bitter before it's time. And that's why that's such a tragedy. So, the first verse of chapter 12, what's his fifth admonition? Remember your Creator when? In the days of your youth. Now, does that mean that it's not to be a happy time if an older person comes to Christ? Well, no, we're always glad for anybody coming to the Lord. And there will be some who don't remember God in their youth. Better late than never, though. But what we're saying to the young people is to live the most full kind of life. When should you come to the Lord? When you're young. You can live most of your life for Him and doing His will. So do this while you're still in your youth. And then he says to remember him before the evil days come. And when those years draw near, when you say what? And we just mentioned that a few moments ago. When many older people will say, I just don't have any pleasure. There's no delight in even being alive. And this gets us back up again to where this whole context began, chapter 11, verse 7, all the way through the end of that chapter. And he sort of reemphasizes that here again in the first verse of chapter 12. Now, about these evil days, I believe what we have following that here in the text gives a description of these evil days. And this gets us to question 34 on page 24. Depending on whatever reading you might do, you might get a different answer for this, but in my mind, I'm convinced. I believe Solomon is using a very, very poetic way to describe the aging process. Some may take a different view of that, and that would be fine, of course. But that's how we're going to present it here in our studies together. Because I think when you put that right at the end of what he just got through saying, admonishing the young to do all these things, especially emphasized with verse 1 of chapter 12, the last admonition, you do all these things before the evil days come. Now, does that mean that the older years of one's life are automatically evil? Well, no, it's just an expression. When you compare it to the exuberance and the vitality of youth, then old age is somewhat of an evil. Not that it's bad, but it's just not as enjoyable as youth is. I mean, for one thing, when you get older, you get more tired, right? You don't have the energy you used to have. And there's some things that the old cannot do anymore that they used to could do. Sometimes we regret that. Well, those things start to fail. That's correct. So, to me, it seems like he's emphasizing the gradual progression from what I'm going to call the strength of youth to the sunset of life. And let's look now at these days. I asked you to go through, and I've given you big space here on page 24, to look through this and see if you could come up with the representation or the meaning of some of these expressions. I'm not going to be dogmatic about this, because again, study this with different materials, you may see some different answers. But when he says that, starting in verse 2 of chapter 12, the sun, the light, and etc. are darkened. And then he says, clouds return after the rain. What's that, in a way, you think, expressing? Well, many older people will say, well, I'm just enjoying one... Well, not enjoying. I'm having just one gloomy day after another. It just seems like there's never a break. Will clouds return after the rain anyway? Well, they will, because that's how God has arranged the natural cycle of sun and rain. But many older folks will say, if we can metaphorically look at life as a storm, they get through one and they'll say what? Like, well, it's just, here comes something else. It's just one bad thing after another. Now that's, I'm not sure how apt that is, but that's how a lot of older people will think and feel. And so he says, sun, light, the clouds move in. They obscure the brightness of the sun, the cheeriness of the sun, and here come the clouds in. We just had a storm, but here comes another one. It's just one bad thing after another. That's an evil day, he says. The second one, he says, the watchmen tremble. What might that be a reference to? All right, yes, some will say this, the hands and the arms begin to shake. Somewhat of a physical inability. Now, I tried to find some passages that refer to the arms and the hands as the watchmen. I couldn't find any. I'm not sure how forceful we need to be about that, but that's the general understanding of what that phrase would mean. Mighty men stoop. What might that be referencing? All right, yeah. The legs bend, or one's overall posture begins to deteriorate. And that happens. Especially among some older women who begin to experience osteoporosis really bad. I mean, that's just a fact of aging. And we see that with so many, unfortunately. Grinding ones stand idle. And then he says, and they are few. I think he's talking about the teeth. Teeth cease to function and eventually begin to lose them. And more have to, if they are so inclined, to wear false teeth because of their natural teeth are gone. Again, that's just the effects of aging. Those who look through the windows grow dim. I think the eyes begin to fail. I think he's referencing diminished eyesight. I can't see as well as you used to can see. Even with things like cataract surgery or putting on bifocals or trifocals. Again, how much can you do to the eyes? You only can do so much until they start to fail on their own. All right. The next one he says, doors of the street are shut and the sounds of the grinding mill is low. And again, I'm getting these statements from my translation. Yours may read a little different than that. So we'll make those differences noted when we have to. But starting with that phrase, what do you think he's talking about? I think diminished hearing is what he's referencing. You can't hear as well as you used to could hear. And older people, I don't mean to poke fun at anyone, but typically you hear someone who's that hard of hearing. What kind of whisperer are there? Are they? They don't whisper even very good. They just can't hear as well, and that happens. Hearing starts to go. One arises at the sound of a bird. Does the King James read different than that? Is this verse 4 or verse 5? Verse 4. How does the New King James read? Rises up at the sound of a bird. Andrew, how does the English Standard read? Okay. So what might that be talking about? Yes, you can't sleep as good as you used to. Restlessness, loss of sleep. Right now, my father's going through that. He just cannot sleep. He's got sleep apnea and other things, and he's not getting his rest. He's 81, so he's in this category, and that's just a part of the aging process. Daughters of song sing softly. Is there a difference in the other versions with that phrase? Daughters of music are brought low. Alright? Now there's some difference about what this might mean. It could be another reference to the loss of hearing, or some would take the position that we start to see a loss of the ability to sing, be that as it may. And I've noticed sometimes some older saints don't sing as much as they used to when we're assembled, and maybe that's an example of what we're talking about here. But okay, maybe not. Maybe not. Yes, okay. Maybe the desire to enjoy music, whether it's psalms and hymns or even secular music, that certainly could come into play, Freddie. That's a good point to make. So that is brought upon us when we're older. Fear of higher places, he says. This is the first part of verse 5. Furthermore, men are afraid of a high place and of terrors on the road. All right, yes. I think fear of heights, I mean, even some won't even climb stairs. They have this fear. Or even taking routine journeys. That years ago, they'd have hopped in a car and driven to California, right? But now they won't even go to Walmart down the street. They just have all these fears. And that's just an aspect of the aging process. So he mentions that here in verse 5. All right, what's the next one? All right, the almond tree blossoms. Now, does the King James say that too? All right. Well, whatever in the world does that mean? I think he's talking about the coming on of white or gray hair. Yeah. Or the loss of hair. Has anybody ever seen an almond tree in full bloom? I haven't seen one either. But what I've read, when the blossoms first come out in the spring, they have a reddish tint to them. But when they're in full bloom, the tree is solid white, like snow. So the almond tree blossoming, it's a very poetic way to put this. It's just the turning of hair from its once vibrant color to gray and then into snow white. Now some like that, some don't. You take your pick, but that's what he's describing. Pardon? Well, that's right. Get some product, try to smear it in your hair to keep it from turning gray. It's going to turn what it's going to turn, so I just let it go. All right, grasshopper drags himself along. How else do the other versions say, middle part of verse 5? The grasshopper's a burden? Okay. What might this be talking about, you know? Loss of strength. All right, a stiffness, maybe a loss of mobility. I've never seen a grasshopper drag himself along, but you get the idea. I think of a grasshopper, I think of legs. I mean, they're just pretty much all legs, aren't they? And that's how they move. Well, if you have a dragging grasshopper, put that picture in your mind, that's projecting this image of loss of ability, mobility, stiffness. Yes, that years ago, you didn't give it a second thought. Now we have to factor in things like arthritis in the joints, in the legs, and even in the hands. You can't even grip things in your hands as easily anymore because of the advancement of age. And so we see. The Holy Spirit could have been very blunt about this, but He's using Solomon, giving this very expressive, and I'm using it the term of poetic way, to describe the aging process. Now, here's where we have a difference. I know it's in the middle part of verse 5. American Standard reads, "The caperberry is ineffective." King James says, "Desire fails." And what's the English Standard say, Angela? "Desire fails." All right. If I look this up, I didn't jot it down what the Septuagint reads. I wish I had done that. Maybe I did. Yes. Septuagint reads, "The caper shall be scattered." Or the fruit from the caper bush. Does anybody know what caper berries were used for in the days of the Bible? I found two uses. Or the caperberry. Either it's a loss of appetite or a loss of sexual desire. Caperberries were used oftentimes as an appetite inducement. So as one gets older, what about his or her eating habits? Don't they start to diminish? Taste goes. They don't eat as much. And some writers say that the caperberry was also used as an aphrodisiac. And so if that be the case, then the sexual activity will certainly decline in one's older years or his later years of life. So it seems that either one may certainly fit the context. I'm not sure if we could point specifically one to the other. But even that, with the King James reading, "desire fails," you can see how that would certainly describe either one of those two situations as well. All right, so I thought that was somewhat interesting, given that some later translations actually put the caper berry in there. It's ineffective. Okay. Look now at last part of verse 5. What is said about man? All right. He goes to his eternal home while mourners go about in the street. Now, what do you know about mourners in the Bible days, whether it's Old or New Testament? All right. I don't want to use the term hired, but there were, or professional, but there were some who were seen as somewhat professional mourners. They were used in the process of when someone died, as if you didn't have enough family to mourn your death, but they had others who would maybe come and sing certain songs at a funeral, or would be available to help in that way. So what he's saying is that the process of dying, man is on his way. In fact, when does man start to die? This is ironic. The day he's born, doesn't it? He starts the dying process the very day that he's born. Would it be true to say that all of us are terminal? We are. We're all terminal. We're mortal. That's right. And so the process of dying is emphasized. While mourners, it seems, as he says, they wait in the streets just ready to ply their trade, ready to be used, because that's the direction that you're headed. Does this sound kind of morbid? But it's the realistic view. Jumping back just for a second, go back to chapter 7. We spent some time on this in what I think is one of the most effective funeral texts when you're talking about a funeral. Chapter 7, verse 2. "It is better to go to the house of mourning than to the house of feasting." Now, why is it good to discuss this? Why is this discussion not morbid? The end of verse 2 of chapter 7. That's the end of every man. And the living do what? They take it to heart. They do. They're able to be exhorted and taught. In fact, I remember saying this when we went through this chapter. When is the best time to preach the gospel? It's at a funeral, isn't it? And you've got their attention. Especially if there are those in the audience who have not yet obeyed the Lord. And they're thinking about death. I mean, they're already there. And they see their loved one's casket, whether it's a grandparent, a parent, a sibling, a spouse, whatever it may be. So he says, man is on his way to that eternal place and the mourners are ready to ply their trade. Now, starting in verse 6, this is maybe some of the more difficult language. Remember him before the silver cord is broken and the golden bowl is crushed. Now let's stop right there. Let's just consider the first half of verse 6. So we have a silver cord is broken and a golden bowl is crushed. What image do you see portrayed here in the first half of this verse? A bowl and a cord. Well, okay, that's good. Okay. Well, I think you're on the right track. But most of what I read, the image portrayed here is that of a lamp. The cord would be the wick, that which would supply the oil to the lamp, and the bowl is the container. What happens if the cord is broken or the bowl is crushed? There's no there'll be no light. And have we already used in this text light to represent living? The light is pleasant. It's good to see the light. It's good to be alive. So, in this case, as we started in verse 2, we've come down to verse 6. We've progressed along this timeline. We get to verse 6. Whereabouts are we in terms of one's life? Right at the end. That's right. Right at the end. The second image here is, he says, the pitcher by the well is shattered. Mine says, pitcher by the well is shattered, and the wheel at the cistern is crushed. Does that read differently in the King James, but both old or new? Okay. All right. Angela, does it read different in the English Standard? Okay. Well, I think we see the image here. It's pretty obvious we're talking about a well. I've never worked with a well. Some of you all have, I know. What if you have a crushed well wheel? That's almost a tongue twister. What happens? You begin to water. It's not going to work. So the well apparatus no longer works. And these two together, Freddie just mentioned, I believe many writers will say, he's talking about the internal organs of the person starting to fail, whether it's the heart, the lungs, the liver, the kidneys, all those things. Of course, we have to have those to function and to live. So we see now one at the very end of life, at the very end of living. Yes. And when you see organs shut down, we're not trying to be depressing, but when you see this starting to happen, what do we realize? It's not long. I mean, a person cannot live with this kind of stuff happening, can they? It's just not going to work. That's not how we're made or designed. So you see how we've gone from in this grand text. Again, don't start in 12 and verse 1. Start in 11 verse 7 through 12 and verse 8. The exhorting to the young to do those five things we mentioned. Because why? What's awaiting you if you're young? This very thing. Now, not trying to be depressing. That's just the way life is. We are not made to live here forever. That's not what it's about. We have a very definite time limit. And we need to understand that. Okay, so at the end of this process, he described the aging process now. We come to verse 7. And notice how he puts it together now. He says, then, what happens? The dust will return to the earth as it was. So what's happened when you come to verse 7? The person has died. The person has died. So the dust will return to the earth. Man is from dust, isn't he? And that's where he'll return. Passages from Genesis record, again, 2 and verse 7. What was the curse said to Adam? You'll eat your bread by the sweat of your face until what? You return to dust. This is from there that I took you. And so that's where we're headed. Now, that of course describes the body, first part of verse 7. What's the last part of verse 7? All right. We have this other part of us, don't we? This spirit. And the spirit returns to God who first gave it. And again, citing Genesis 2 and verse 7. Separation of the body and the spirit. Which we know is the meaning of the word death. Death means separation. Body and soul are separated. Yes. Well, yes, it is. Yes. And in God's punishment, He said, lest he take out his hand and eat of that tree and live forever. That's why God had to banish them from the garden, because the tree of life was there. And we next read about it where? In the book of Revelation. What I've again accessed to the tree of life. So, his final admonition, verse 8, a simple statement. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher. All is vanity. Where have you heard that before? This is question 36. Yeah, turn back to chapter 1 and verse 2. When we started months ago, what did he say? The words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. Vanity of vanity, says the preacher. All is vanity. So he's presented now his entire book. We have just the epilogue to go, the conclusion. Verses 9 through 14. And we've covered a lot of ground. But has he changed his position? No, it's the same. What he has presented is what he said back there. And what do we say vanity or life or all is vanity under the sun? What that represent? It means a life lived without God. It is a complete waste. If you live the way that Solomon has taught us in this book, even in this uncertain world, would life be vain? No. If it's lived with meaning and purpose, your life would not be vain. It would not be empty. It would be full of what's good. But if you seek to live life apart from the way God designed you and made you, no matter how much money you make, no matter how much you acquire in terms of achievement and accomplishment in life, what is your life? It's a big fat zero is what it is. We don't mean to be too blunt about that, but that's really the truth of the matter. So we'll stop with that. It's 5 till, but I don't want to get into the conclusion. My thinking is we probably can finish lesson 7 next time. And I should have the next material ready to hand out. I'm working on it right now. For us to continue our studies until the summer break. Okay, anything else anybody's got, a comment or question through verse 8 of chapter 12? See, I'm giving you 5 minutes again. You still owe me for the last time I did that. No, I appreciate your attention and your participation. Okay, well, we'll see you next Tuesday. We'll see you tonight for the last of our meeting, and then we'll see you next week for our class. Thanks for coming out again today.